A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, in a black and white film, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, credits appear over still images of a university campus. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Joan Crawford and Fred McMurray in Above Suspicion, copyright 1943. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education, described by Justin Soule and Christopher Flowers, read by Miles Neff. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. Produced by Victor Saville, screenplay by Keith Winter, Melville Baker, and Patricia Coleman, based upon the novel by Helen McInnes. Director of Photography, Robert Plank, ASC. Musical score by Bronislaw Kaper. Film editor, George Hively. Cast, Joan Crawford as Frances Miles, Fred McMurray as Richard Miles, Conrad Veidt as Hassert Seidel, Basil Rathbone as Sig von Aschenhausen, Reginald Owen as Dr. Mespelbrunn, Richard Ainley as Peter Galt, Cecile Cunningham as the Countess, Anne Shoemaker as Aunt Ellen, Sarah Hayden as Aunt Hattie, Felix Brassard as Mr. A. Werner, Bruce Lester as Thornley, Johanna Hofer as Frau Kleist, and Lotta Palfi as Otilli. Directed by Richard Thorpe. Now words appear over the university skyline. Oxford, 1939. On campus, a newspaper vendor wears a sign with two headlines, Danzig, Hitler Speaks, and Oxford Cricket Latest, All Out 39. Young men in jackets and ties stream past him toward an arched walkway.
I say, fellows, here they come.
Gangway for the bridegroom.
Make way for them.
A bride in a gown and veil tugs on the heel of her shoe as a groom leads her past the young men.
Dearest beloved, are you limping?
No, I'm not. It's just my funny ankle.
Your what?
I fell off a horse when I was little.
Then you didn't tell me everything.
Every time I get nervous, I slip the shoe off my heel.
Miss Blake, you will remain after class and copy your marriage vows 500 times.
Charmed. Miss Blake doesn't live here anymore. There's only a mysterious Mrs. Miles.
The newlyweds smile lovingly at each other.
Happy honeymoon, Professor Miles.
Best wishes, sir.
As the newlyweds climb into the back seat of a dark limousine, a chauffeur moves to the driver's seat. Students huddle behind the car, then back away. As it moves ahead, a chain wrapped around a post pulls taut. The newlyweds lurch forward as the car comes to an abrupt stop. A student unwraps the chain. The chauffeur climbs out, then turns and follows the rolling car. In a building nearby, a white mustached man turns from a window and picks up a phone receiver.
Sorry, sir. They just made their getaway.
Where are they headed for?
In an office.
Well, do you know the number of the car? All right.
He picks up another phone receiver.
Scotland Yard Extension. Hello, let me speak to Inspector Beale. This is the Foreign Office. Peter Galt speaking. Hello, Inspector. Pick up a car carrying Richard Miles and his bride, heading for a continental honeymoon. Should be somewhere between here and Dover. Don't let them leave the country before I see them. It's urgent. Thanks.
He hangs up. Nighttime. In the town of Walmer, Richard drives his bride in a convertible through an arched underpass. They stop beside a quaint building with lit windows.
But this isn't the Lord Walden.
No, it isn't Dover either.
What are you afraid of, Richard?
The Oxford sense of humor, dear. It's deadly this time of year.
They'll be waiting at the Lord Walton. Think of all the fun and games you'll deprive them of.
Yes. Think of it.
Smiling, Richard leans in and kisses his new bride.
Well,
good evening.
Good evening.
Fran trips on an entry. As they head into the hotel, a bellboy retrieves their suitcases from the car. Inside, Richard signs a registration book. An elderly clerk turns it to face her and reads.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I suppose it's all right.
She hands them a key.
First door on the left, top of the stairs.
Richard follows his wife past the front desk to a staircase. The clerk keeps a stern gaze on them as they pass.
Mind you draw the blinds.
What?
There's a practice blackout tonight.
Oh.
The clerk turns to the front desk and picks up a phone receiver. Later, the cliffs of Dover appear through a window in the Miles hotel room. Richard steps out of the bathroom and tightens the belt of his robe. Sitting on the bed beside Fran as she writes in a journal, he peeks at the current page. She hands him the journal.
You mind?
Mm-mm.
He reads from it.
We always have to pay for all we have and what we hope to have. I hate to think of what the peace and serenity of our honeymoon grabbed from a crazy world will cost us.
Richard smiles at his wife, then flips through the pages.
What are you looking for?
April 2nd.
Well, you remember that day.
April 2nd. I met Richard Miles. He doesn't seem to have progressed beyond the Paleolithic age, 15,000 years B.C. I decided to marry him.
Richard closes the book and moves in to kiss her.
Oh, but I haven't finished the day's doing.
He sets down the journal.
You can't finish it.
Why not?
Because it isn't over yet.
He leans back into her. Outside, a police constable ascends the staircase and approaches the door to their room. Inside, Richard pulls away from his wife.
Who is it?
Mr. Smith?
Smith? You've got the wrong room. Oh, Smith! Yes, this is Smith. What is it?
It's Constable Jones from the village. Can I have a word with you, sir?
Right now?
If you please.
Richard glances at Fran.
All right.
She stands behind her husband as he unlocks the door and pulls it open.
Mr. Edward Smith?
Yes.
Could I trouble you to step downstairs with me, sir?
This is no time for practical jokes.
This is no joke, Mrs.
That isn't very practical either.
Well, that's as may be. But I must trouble you to come down, sir. And come quietly.
Very well.
Richard closes the door partway and turns to his wife.
Oh, you won't be gone long, will you, Mr. Smith?
5 years. That's the maximum for false registration.
He gives her a kiss, then heads into the hallway. She closes the door as he follows Constable Jones down the staircase.
You know, Constable, I can explain all this.
I'm glad you can, sir. You've given us a lot of trouble. The whole police force has been looking for you.
Oh, really? Well, you know what college undergraduates are. A bridegroom sort of has to protect himself in the clinches.
We'd have had you before if you hadn't changed cars. That's what did it.
Did what?
I have to hold you, sir, until a certain party from the Foreign Office gets here.
The Foreign Office?
Jones nods toward an open door.
Wait in here, if you please. He's on his way now.
Richard heads inside, and the constable shuts the door. Later in the hotel dining room.
In Paris, you'll make your first contact, then go right into Germany.
Oh, have a heart, Peter. After all, I shouldn't even be talking to you. My bride's upstairs wondering what's happened to her.
We both know what it means if the Germans go into Poland, and our information is they will.
Yes, I know, but...
It won't be easy to find this man. You see, people in Germany don't talk these days. Even our own people will only give you indications. Never a word that might incriminate them. So, you see, I need a fellow who's sort of bright and reads signs.
Yes, yeah, well, thanks very much, Peter, but this is my wedding night.
You know, the man you're looking for has completely disappeared. I don't know what his name is. I don't even know what he looks like. But if the Gestapo have got him, we may have to reorganize our whole setup.
Well, we all have our little troubles, Peter. Good night.
Richard, I'm asking you to do something of vital importance.
Richard stares solemnly at Peter.
It's only fair to tell you that there's an element of risk attached to it to both yourself and your wife. The man you're looking for has complete details of the new German secret weapon.
Secret weapon? I thought that was just Nazi ballyhoo.
Really exists. Ever heard of a magnetic mine?
No.
They sit at a table.
What is it?
Underwater mine that attracts itself to ships by magnetism.
It's an ingenious idea.
It's more than that. Imagine what that could do to our lifelines. Remember the last war?
Yes. How does it work?
I wish we knew. Find that man and he'll give you the electrical formula.
Oh. And then your scientists will figure out a way to counteract it.
It's our only chance. I believe you can make the grade if you two are willing to take the risk.
Well, if I know Francis, she'll want to help. Anyone would in a case like this.
Thanks. But don't let her know how serious it is. Women are inclined to overplay their hand. Just tell her you're doing me a little favor by hunting up someone we've lost sight of.
Upstairs, Fran checks a clock on a writing table, then heads to an armoire and pulls out a dark jacket. Wearing only a nightgown, she sets the jacket over her shoulders and heads out the door, back in the dining room.
Oh, hello, dear. Come on in.
Richard goes to his wife.
Francis, this is Peter Galt.
Congratulations. I'm sorry I couldn't get to the wedding.
I've told you about Peter. We were undergraduates together.
Yes, I know. Richard's very fond of you, Mr. Gold, in spite of what appears to be a rather morbid sense of humor.
She's lovely, Richard. I'm sorry to intrude, Mrs. Miles, and I didn't mean to keep Richard so long. You see, I was telling him my adventures in trying to find you tonight.
Yes, well, I wouldn't have missed hearing about them for the world, but if you'll excuse us,
oh, certainly, certainly.
Oh, I suppose by now your Confederates have moved our bed out of our room.
No, darling, you have the wrong idea.
Oh, you mean this isn't just an undergraduate prank?
Oh, no, I assure you.
Peter had something he wanted to tell us.
As Richard leads his wife to the table, Peter shuts the dining room doors and turns to them.
I know it's a bit thick to intrude on your, I mean to intrude. You see, I had to catch Richard before he left the country.
But we'll be back in 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, it's really nothing, dear. It's just a little errand that Peter wants us to run while we're on the continent.
That's all just a little errand.
Fran's eyes widen.
You're from the Foreign Office, aren't you?
More or less.
And you had the whole police force looking for us?
Not the whole force.
You want us to run an errand for you on the continent? Oh, Richard, we're spies.
Look, I say, you're nothing of the sort.
Francis, I told you, we're just running an errand, that's all.
Well, then why all the hurry?
You see, I knew you were going to South Germany on your honeymoon. Well, there's a friend of mine there who hasn't written lately. I'm worried about him. So I want Richard to look him up as soon as it's convenient. That's all there is to it.
Oh, why don't you telegraph him?
I don't know who he is.
Oh, I see. Riddles.
It's very simple, dear. There's a man in Paris who's going to tell us where to find Peter's friend.
Well, that's fine. Who's the man in Paris?
Oh, we don't know.
Oh, you don't know? Well, of course not. It'd be much too easy to find a man we knew.
Well, it'll be easy to find this man, too. All we have to do is go to the Café de l'Opéra on Saturday night at 10 o'clock and spill a glass of Cointreau.
I know. Don't tell me. We climb through a train window, fire off a gun in a deserted theater, whistle Annie Laurie backwards, and Boris Karloff will fall out of a closet with an apple in his mouth.
Be gentle with my wife, Peter. She's an American.
So are you, Benedict Arnold.
Her conception of foreign affairs stems directly from Hollywood.
Please, Mrs. Miles, don't dramatize this little errand. I'm asking Richard to do this because he's... Well, he's an ordinary chap and an American. And he's been climbing in the Tyrol for the past 8 years regularly. I'm sure he won't attract undue attention or be interfered with.
Oh, I see. Typical tourists, above suspicion.
Right.
With a smirk, Fran leans in to Peter.
Any last-minute instructions?
Richard's got them.
I see.
Actually, dear, the less you know or seem to know, the better.
That's what my mother told me the night I came out in Boston.
You'll wear a hat with a red rose on it.
Must I?
For purposes of identification.
Oh.
While the waiter's mopping up the Cointreau, use the phrase Mrs. Rose says. Then name a meeting place. Mr. X of Paris will contrive to indicate a time. Follow that up and he'll give you the instructions where and how to find the next man.
The next man? Wait a minute, how many men are there?
I'm not sure, but my friend will be at the end of the trail. For the rest, just follow your noses and use your common sense. Above all, don't get mixed up in anything suspicious.
Oh.
Don't get excited.
No, of course not.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, dear.
Peter leaves.
Well, you see, dear, it's really nothing.
Spies.
Later, upstairs, Richard takes his wife's jacket as they enter their room. Fran stands with her bare arms crossed.
You know, I'm actually trembling.
Oh, are you cold, dear?
I must get a hat with a big red rose. What are you doing?
Oh, I thought you said you were shivering.
No, darling, not shivering, trembling.
Oh.
Aren't you even the least little bit nervous?
Well, yes. But, no more than is customary on a honeymoon, I guess.
Just think of what's ahead of us.
Grinning, Richard turns his wife to face him and embraces her. Now in Paris, a statue looks out over the bank of a river. On a street below, a mirror with the address 1 Rue Scribe etched on its base reflects the Eiffel Tower. Passing by, Fran stops to shift a rose on top of her veiled hat. Now in a Parisian hotel room, she stands in front of another mirror, adjusting the hat's dark veil.
Tis the last rose of summer, the last rose.
A rose by any other name.
Well, I shouldn't have any trouble seeing that, shouldn't I?
You know, that's not bad. That's not bad at all.
That's very pretty.
Thank you, darling. Richard, somebody's been messing about with my things. When we went to dinner, my glove case was there, and the 2 bottles of perfume were in the center like that.
Well, the maid probably dusted.
No, she dusted this morning.
I was afraid of this. No matter what she dusted, darling, we are now going to the Café de l'Opéra. Stop imagining things.
As he kisses her, a startled maid opens the door.
Pardon, Monsieur Dame. Usually, Monsieur and Madame have gone out by this time, so...
That's perfectly all right.
The maid enters.
Will Madame need anything more this evening?
No, nothing more tonight, thank you.
Fran carefully scrutinizes the maid from the doorway.
Come on, darling.
Richard ushers his wife out, shutting the door behind them. The maid quickly locks it from the inside, then looks around the room. She heads to a suitcase and reaches into its top pouch. Inside, she finds a small booklet. She carries it to a desk and takes a seat. It's a U.S. passport. The name inside reads Mr. Richard Miles. The maid flips to a page with a German government stamp. In the margins around an insignia of an eagle over a swastika, she scribbles several foreign words with a pen. Now at a cafe, a man wearing a tasseled fez holds out a patterned carpet to Fran and Richard.
Salaamu alaikum, lady and gentlemen. Salaamu alaikum. Very old drug, many hundred years old.
Not today, thank you.
I will give him for 100 francs.
I said not today.
This carpet, he belongs to the Ahmed of Baghdad. His wives make it for him. He keeps them very busy. It tells the story of his life. Very dirty.
Imshi, yalla. Ya ibn kum samira maras wan nagayana.
The salesman storms away from their table.
What on earth did you say to him?
Very dirty, like carpet.
Richard takes a sip from his espresso mug.
Allah have mercy, it just isn't true.
What?
Across the cafe, two elderly women wave.
It's Aunt Hattie and Aunt Ellen from Boston.
It's almost 10 o'clock.
I know, here they come. What do we do?
Drug them heavily and ship them to Rio.
Francis, my God.
Of all people, of all places.
Yes, isn't it?
Oh, your Uncle Frederick will be so delighted when he hears about this. But we thought you were in Oxford studying.
Oh, yes, I was.
All theory and no practice makes Fran a dull girl. N'est-ce pas, chérie?
Oh, Richard.
Well, now don't be nervous, sweetie. Aunt Hattie understands. You wouldn't be in Paris, would you, Aunt Hattie?
I'm Aunt Ellen.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't think you've met...
Well, the name is Smith. Mr. Edward Smith.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Where are you staying, Francis?
Oh, where...
A little hideout over in the left bank. When you write Uncle Frederick, I wouldn't mention that you'd seen us. That's all right with me, but Fran here, well, you know how it is.
Quite.
Thanks. It's lucky you're the sporty type. Must run in the family, eh, Fran?
It's been nice seeing you, Francis. We're at the Creole, if you need us.
Yes, Francis, if you're in any trouble.
Oh, don't you worry about Fran. She's in safe hands. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Smith.
As the two aunts walk off, Richard and Fran sit back down.
Richard, how could you?
Darling, it's 10 o'clock. I couldn't take time out to tell them how you swept me off my feet and made an honest man of me before your family knew it. Almost before I knew it. Well, we got work to do. Here goes.
He tips over a drink glass.
Shall I start the Mrs. Rose signal now?
A waiter approaches their table.
Oula, permettez.
They say Mrs. Rose. That is to say, Mrs. Rose says that,
A tuxedo cafe manager sends the waiter away.
Je suis désolé, madame. Je ne sais comment m'excuser pour la maladresse de ce garçon.
Mrs. Rose says the Frisky Rabbit Cafe in Montmartre is really wonderful. N'est-ce pas?
Oui, madame. Certainement, madame.
The cafe manager smiles at her as he slowly walks away. A smoking man approaches.
Mrs. Rose says the Frisky Rabbit Cafe in Montmartre is really very original.
The man puts out his cigarette in their ashtray.
Pardon. Oui, le Frisky Rabbit at 11.
Later at a restaurant, a clock reads 11. As Fran and Richard enter, a cloakroom attendant and a maitre d' greet them.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
The attendant takes Richard's coat.
Madame, monsieur.
The maitre d' leads them to a large banquet hall where a speaker addresses the riveted patrons.
En lui parlant, la belle soupira.
Fran and Richard take two empty seats at a long table.
Les ailes lui coupa.
Hola, Tajil, all men are brothers. Brothers in freedom, love, music, song, and the art.
The maitre d' leaves.
La la, deri, terra.
Bravo!
The maitre d' returns with two drink glasses.
Madame, monsieur, where's Joseph?
Oh, we didn't order these.
Oh, compliment of the house, monsieur.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome, madame.
Across the room, the smoking man watches
them.
Richard and Fran clink glasses, then raise them to their mouths.
Oh, no. Pas encore, monsieur.
No?
Oh, I see. You have never visited us before.
No, I haven't.
Well, you see, every new arrival must perform before they have their drinks. It's the house custom.
Oh. Sing for your supper.
C'est ça exactement, monsieur.
No, but you see, we don't do it. We're
not done.
The other patrons crowd around them. Fran and Richard stand up.
Madame, monsieur,
charmants américains. Ils vont faire quelque chose, je ne sais pas ce que c'est, mais ce sera dès maintenant. Bravo.
As they walk past the table, Fran tugs on her heel. Richard escorts her to a piano.
What'll we do?
Sing, I guess. Ladies and gentlemen, my wife and I will oblige with a famous old American folk song.
She's only a bird in a gilded cage, a beautiful sight to see. You may think she's happy and free from care. She's not, though she seems to be, she's sad when you think of her wasted life.
Seeing the smoking man at the bar, Richard turns to his wife.
For beauty was sold.
Richard motions to his wife.
For an old man's gold. She's a bird in a gilded cage.
Fran grabs her purse from the piano and leads Richard back to their table. The adoring patrons crowd around them as they sit. The couple smiles politely. As the crowd disperses, they sip their drinks. The couple discreetly turns toward the bar. The smoking man is gone.
Must have. Come on.
As they stand, a waiter approaches.
Bonjour, monsieur, vous participez?
That's
way
past our
bedtime. Bonjour, monsieur. Monsieur, your coat.
The cloakroom attendant helps Richard into his coat. Richard hands him a tip.
Merci mille fois. Bonsoir, monsieur. Bonsoir, madame.
Outside, Richard and Fran see the smoking man ride away in a car. Fran drops her arms disappointedly and turns to her husband. He puts on his fedora and they walk arm in arm down the sidewalk. As he reaches into his pocket, his brow furrows and he pulls out a book.
What's that?
Guide to Southern Germany.
Where did you get it?
I didn't. It got me.
Richard and Fran share a smile as they continue down the sidewalk. Richard pats his wife's hand. Later in their hotel room, they sit huddled together, flipping through the book.
No indication there. It's just an ordinary guidebook.
But it's a guide to Southern Germany, so that must be where they're telling us to go.
Yeah, but Southern Germany's a big place. There's a map here in the back.
Let's have a look at it. It might tell us something.
Fran unfolds a map from the back page.
Hey, look. What are all those little dots? They look like ink marks.
Richard, it's a clue. It must be.
It could be.
Go on, give
me
that.
What are we supposed to make out of a little dots?
I don't know, but let's follow the dots. Maybe we'll find something. But it'll spell out something.
Hey, now you're going. Something's coming up.
Looks like an E, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No, it looks like an S. Look. Richard, it's a clef. Music.
Music?
Yeah, see?
It's simple, isn't it?
Yes, dear.
She draws a straight line.
Miles, you're remarkable.
Adding four more lines, she forms a music bar around the ink dots. She and Richard glance at each other.
Da 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 da. My love is like a red rose.
Fran's lips curl into a smile.
Darling, I told you you should go to the movies more often.
Yeah, but wait a minute. My love is like a red rose. Where does that get us?
Well, it's obviously a password. Neither we whistle it or hum it or they do.
Yeah. Who are they?
Well, they've got me. I don't know.
She holds the end of the map to a light.
What are those?
Three pinholes. What are you supposed to figure out from that?
Well, it could be three people, or the third day of the month, or
the third page of this book.
Fran bounces up and down excitedly as she flips through the pages.
A. Werner, Salzburg. Bookstore. Current literature. Rare books. First editions. Old music albums. Fran? How would you like to go to Salzburg?
Later in Salzburg, a parade of Nazis goose-step down a quaint street of tall spired buildings. They pass underneath a lamppost with a sign that reads Marienstrasse. Across the cobblestone street, Richard and Fran stand against an arched wall, watching the uniformed soldiers march past.
You know, if they don't take it easy, they'll be burnt out before they're 21.
Richard nudges her and she jumps.
That's what I hate so. I'm so tired of looking over my shoulder.
Take a look up here.
All right.
As they walk arm in arm across the plaza, Fran stumbles and reaches for her heel.
Oh.
Not again.
No, darling, not this time. It's the cobblestones. They're difficult to walk on.
They turn a corner around a bakery.
Oh, wait a minute, will you?
She checks her hair in a window.
A rose by any other name. No, not so good today. Not smart.
What's the matter? No sleep last night?
I slept all right, but I kept dreaming I was awake.
Kids, here we go again.
As they move out of the way, Francia lands on a man's shoe.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Honored, gracious lady.
He doffs his fedora to her.
Honored.
The smiling man glances at Richard through his monocle, then walks off.
The polite type, unheard of in these parts.
As they start moving forward, Richard stops.
Might be a quaint little shop to explore.
What's quaint about...
She follows his gaze to a storefront sign reading A. Werner.
Yes, it is kind of quaint. You know, they just might have it.
We can ask. Of course, the 1836 edition is very rare.
Well, the shop looks as though it's been here since 1836.
Inside the darkly lit bookstore, a clerk sits behind a desk.
Guten Tag. Sprechen Sie English?
Yeah?
I'm looking for an edition of Schiller's plays published by Tübner of Leipzig in 1836.
I have heard of no such edition.
Well, that's all right. I have.
If there was this book, I would know.
Have you a catalog? Maybe that would know, too.
Catalog. I am she here.
Fran turns to her husband.
She looks like one, too.
Richard pulls out a scrap of paper from his wallet.
I have a clipping here that will show you that there is such an edition.
He unfolds it as he approaches the clerk's desk. She looks at it in his hand.
Yeah, but we do not have the book.
Fran and her husband lock eyes from opposite sides of the shop as he refolds the clipping and steps away.
Maybe there's someone here who can tell us where we might find it.
You will not find this book in Salzburg.
Fran picks up a book from the table.
Oh, I see you sell music, too. You don't mind my having a look around, do you? Thank you so much. Richard, we used to have this book at home. I remember...
Richard and Fran turn to see a middle-aged man with round glasses and a mustache step out of an office. With a smile on his face, he nods at the couple, then approaches them.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May I be of service?
Mr. Werner?
Yes.
I'm looking for the Tübner 1836 edition of Schiller's plays.
Oh, that's a very early edition. It is very rare.
Madame, you are soiling your fine gloves on these dirty books.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Oh, Bartilia, get a duster from the back room.
The duster is here.
Then it is a pity you do not use it more. And the duster is as dirty as the books. Get a clean one from the back room. I'm sorry.
What an attractive edition this is. Look, Richard, at the printing.
She holds the songbook open to the sheet music for My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose.
They do not sing the old songs these days.
Some of us do.
Well, I'm afraid we do not have that book you asked for, but over here we have some later editions.
Would you dust my gloves, please?
It would have been better you had taken off your gloves.
Do you know the poet Heine? A man of simple habits. He loved so much his music and his roses. A friend of mine, whose tastes are rather similar, tells me...
Through the window, Mr. Werner sees four Gestapo officers marching toward the bookstore.
He tells me that there's nothing he loves so much as reading Heine in his rose garden. In the late afternoon.
He points to a postcard for the Berg Museum.
I have another book of Schiller's that may interest you. I'll be back in a minute. Excuse me.
Mr. Werner runs past Fran and the clerk to his office.
Hi, Nisha.
Who is there?
The clerk nods toward the office.
Mir nach.
As the Gestapo officers head to the office, Mr. Werner hides in a secret compartment behind a bookcase. Upon entering, the officers find the room empty. The senior officer marches back to the clerk.
Er ist nicht da.
Er muss da sein. Er ist doch eben hereingegangen.
Aber er ist nicht mehr da. Was wollen die hier?
It may sound silly to you, but we came in here to find a book.
A book?
Yes, to read, you know.
Where is it?
You've got me there, dope.
Was heißt das, dope?
It's the 1836 edition of Schiller's plays. Perhaps you can suggest...
No.
Heil
Hitler.
Good day.
The officer squints at Fran.
I gave you our German greeting, American.
We gave you ours, dope.
Richard takes his wife's arm and leads her to the door.
Was heißt das, dope?
Now, a postcard with a drawing of the Berg Museum fills our view inside the real museum.
This is the menschliche Fackel. Der Verurteilte wurde in dieses Instrument eingeschlossen, mit Öl begossen und angezündet. Man konnte das
Leuchten der Menschen in Bagelmeitin sehen und auch die Schreie des Opfers wurden oft gehört. Die Schreie waren oft fürchterlich, aber es ist immerhin Zeit zu sehen, ob auch...
What's he saying?
He's explaining that the object of that little contraption is to produce pain.
Well, it doesn't exactly look like a sedative.
It was last used in 1806.
In 1827. And is still in good working condition. Do not listen to that guide. He's not of the first grade.
Well, it's a coincidence bumping into you again.
Not a coincidence at all. I have been following you.
Oh, really? It's very flattering.
Not so flattering. I'm a guide.
Oh, we don't need a guide, thank you.
I'm sure I can interest you. This elaborate piece was a fascinating device for removing fingernails, and is still in good working condition.
A totalitarian manicure. You don't look very much like a guide.
Perhaps you don't look so much like tourists. My name is Count Hasso Seidel. My friends call me Hassi.
How do you do?
And here we have the Iron Maiden.
He opens a standing sarcophagus filled with spikes.
Otherwise known as a German Statue of Liberty.
I'm surprised to hear a German say that.
I'm an Austrian.
Isn't that very much the same thing nowadays?
Is that the English view?
We're not English, we're Americans.
Isn't that very much the same thing nowadays?
Hassert looks away through his monocle.
May I suggest you change your lodgings to Frau Kleist's, who runs a small hotel at 29 Lange Straße, a charming place. Of course, I get a commission for recommending it.
Holding his fedora in his hands, Hassert stares at Fran.
What a becoming hat you wear. I love red roses. Au revoir.
As he walks away, Fran smiles widely.
Darling,
hmm?
We go this way, don't we?
Yes.
Well, come on.
Now a hotel mailbox reads Gustav Kleist, Salzburg. A woman pulls a key from one of its compartments.
Good evening, Frau Meyer.
Good evening.
Good evening,
Meyer.
Good evening.
Did you have a pleasant day?
Yes, lovely.
Frau Kleist turns to another woman.
Charming couple.
Most correct.
Most. Have you observed her hair?
Yes, not exactly a thing of beauty, is it?
Not only that. She has worn it the past 4 days without stopping. Yeah, even the Americans begin to feel the pinch.
Frau Kleist stamps a receipt.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As the woman leaves, Frau Kleist places a check into a cash register, then looks over her shoulder, now inside one of the rooms.
Come in.
Frau Kleist enters, shutting the door behind her. Inside, a weary-looking man sits at a table beside a tray full of food.
You haven't touched your food again. Why don't you go back to England? There's nothing more you could do here now.
Oh, yes, there is.
The man stands and walks around her.
And the woman with the red rose in her head is still here.
Have you talked to them yet?
I wanted to make sure it wasn't a coincidence. It isn't. She wears it every day.
Meanwhile, in Fran and Richard's room...
Do you know, I am getting a little bored. Waiting for somebody to appreciate this bonnet.
Lying in bed, Fran caresses the rose.
A rose by any other name.
She flicks it with her finger.
Stinks.
She tosses the hat.
Hey, good shot.
Where'd it go?
Top of the stove.
No.
But you couldn't do that again in a million years.
I'll bet I could.
But you can't even get it.
What do you want to bet?
Well.
Fran reaches for her stuck hat with a cane.
Hey, that's my walking stick you're playing with.
And that's my hat.
The handle drops out from the body of a cane, revealing a long dagger.
Now, don't get excited, darling. I just got that stick in case.
And you accuse me of getting my ideas from the movies.
Oh, no, you don't.
They playfully wrestle for the dagger.
Yes, come in.
They hide the dagger behind them as Frau Kleist enters.
Excuse me.
No, that's quite all right, Frau Kleist. Come in, sit down.
Frau Kleist carries in a book.
May I ask, do you go to the Liszt concert tonight?
Yes, we do. Yes, we are.
I take then the liberty to ask, do you know much about Franz Liszt, Herr Professor?
Well, not a great deal.
This book reproduces all his major works and supplies a most instructive commentary on his life. I thought it would help you more to enjoy the concert, and Herr Klopf is a most talented conductor.
Well, I'm sure it'll be a great help. Thanks very much.
Bitte. Frau Kleist.
Frau Meyers.
There was a Liszt concert the second night we were here.
Yes. Why didn't you lend us the commentary then?
I wanted first to make sure we had the same taste in music.
Oh,
And what decided you?
The little song the professor sings so often. Tam, taram, taram, tam,
is that one of your favorites, Frau Kleist?
Yes. It's quite my favorite.
She picks up Fran's hat from the floor and pats the rose with her fingers before handing it over.
Thank you, Frau Kleist.
Holding the dagger behind her back, Fran watches Frau Kleist leave, then locks the door behind her. As she turns away from the door pensively, Richard holds up the book.
You don't want to read about Liszt now, do you, honey?
No, darling.
He tosses it onto the bed. The two exchange a glance, then jump after it.
I see.
He flips it open, pulling his pipe from his mouth.
Concerto number one in E-flat. That's what they're playing tonight.
Page 212.
Page 212.
Fran watches in anticipation as her husband leafs through the pages and finds one missing.
That's funny. Page 212 was torn out.
The lost chord.
What are we supposed to figure out from a missing page?
I don't know. What does the commentary say?
Der anfängliche Fehlschlag dieses Werkes ermöglicht es später, dass er bitte der Gedicht ich allein verstehe.
Yes, I know, but what does it say?
Oh. Ich allein verstehe means no one understands but I. Mm-hmm. That is, no one understands but Liszt.
Well, he's hardly in a position to help us.
See, Appendix 9.
He flips to the back of the book.
Here it is.
Appendix 9. Ich allein verstehe. No one understands but I. The publication of this lyric, written in passionate protest against the vicious treatment accorded to his concerto number one, marked the end, underlined, of Liszt's prolonged feud with his critics. It was about this time that a celebrated doctor, underlined, for years Liszt's most relentless critic, gave up the unequal struggle and retired to his estate at Pertusau,
underlined,
near Innsbruck. Here he devoted his remaining years to writing his somewhat embittered memoirs and collecting chessmen,
underlined. Doctor, Pertusau, Chessman. And the end. Oh, Richard, then we could really have our honeymoon.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Well, next up, Pertusau.
You know, this bed feels pretty good. I think I'll take a nap before the concert.
No, why don't you? Yeah, cover it up.
He pulls the comforter over his wife.
Sleep. Gentle sleep that knitteth up the raveled sleeve of care.
Richard lights his pipe.
Oh, somebody's unraveling the sleeve.
Yeah, sounds like the needle stuck.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's awful.
Richard blows out a puff of smoke, then leaves his resting wife alone. Meanwhile, the English guest plays a piano in his own room.
Herr Ryan?
Bitte verzeihen Sie mir. Ich musste nicht unhöflich sein. Aber...
That's all right, sir. I'm English. You're Mr. Miles, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
My name is Thornley.
How do you do, Miss Thornley?
Won't you come in?
Yes, thank you.
I've seen you at Oxford. I'm there too, Trinity.
Oh, is that so?
Won't you sit down?
Oh, no, thanks. I just dropped in to say that my wife has a headache and she wanted to get a little rest before the concert. I hope you don't think it rude of me to come in.
Oh, it's I that was rude. I thought you were out. Otherwise...
Oh, it's my place to apologize.
Not at all. Let me get you a drink, sir.
Thank you.
I have a little kirsch.
Kirsch, huh?
Thornley retrieves a bottle from a cabinet.
Staying long, sir?
No, we're leaving in the morning. We thought we'd climb half of the car. Oh, when you're in Oxford next term, I hope you'll come over and play your piece all the way through without any rude interruption from me.
Thornley stops pouring the liquor and freezes.
Thank you.
He hands Richard a filled shot glass.
Thanks.
Well, here's to Mrs. Miles. I say, the prettiest woman in Salzburg.
Thank you. I agree.
On the piano sits the torn page of a Liszt concerto.
I'm sorry you're going to the concert tonight. I don't think you'll enjoy it.
Why shouldn't we?
Oh, this conductor Klopp is terrible.
Oh, really? Frau Kleist seemed to think quite the contrary.
What does Frau Kleist know? He's noisy. You know how the Germans love noise.
Now at the concert hall. The orchestra plays to a full house inside the Baroque-style auditorium, which is crowned by a large bowl-shaped chandelier. The conductor turns around and bows to the audience, then heads off into the wings. He stops and bows once more before disappearing through a pair of curtains. The audience rises from their seats. Among them, a tuxedo-clad Richard takes his wife's arm and leads her down the aisle. Fran's dark dress shimmers in the light as she walks. Later, the audience fills the narrow lobby from wall to wall. As Fran and Richard stand to the side, drinking from coffee mugs, a dark-haired man accompanied by a blonde woman in a fur coat walks past.
Say.
The man turns.
Hey, this is a surprise. How are you, Richard? I'm glad to see you.
I don't think you've met my wife. Darling, Carl von Aschenhausen.
How do you do?
How do you do? Yes, I read that you were married. My congratulations. Nora, may I present Mr. and Mrs. Miles?
How do you do?
How do you do?
How do you do?
How do you do?
You stay long in Germany?
Just a couple of weeks, I think.
Come along, Mother. You don't want to miss the concerto, do you?
Oh, I don't mind if I do. These jumpings of Herr Klopp make me most nervous.
Well, Richard, I hope your stay here will be a pleasant one. Madame?
Good night.
Sig and his mother leave.
You know, darling, either there's a draft in here or I caught a faint hint of coolness in his manner.
We used to be very friendly.
Really?
Yes, we were fellow Rhodes Scholars at Oxford.
They walk to a bar.
Well, maybe it's just as well. We don't want to get mixed up with anybody we're not sure of at this stage of the game.
Oh, who's playing cops and robbers now?
They head back to the auditorium. Later, a pianist sits on stage in front of the orchestra. Four Nazi officers file into a private box overlooking the stage and take their seats. Our view swoops down to the stage where the pianist's nimble hands glide over the instrument's keyboard. Reaches into a pocket and pulls out a pistol. The gloved hand holds the pistol underneath a program with a printed swastika. The program lowers, revealing the pistol's muzzle. A felt-tipped drumstick beats down on a kettle drum. In the private box, an elderly officer nods forward in his seat. Behind him, the other officers nudge each other and smile. As the elderly man's body topples over, they gather around him in alarm. Elsewhere, the gloved hand drops the pistol into a planter under a bushy fern. Back in the balcony, the three officers frantically unbutton the victim's jacket and pull open one of his eyelids. Blood seeps through his white shirt. One officer turns to the stage. The conductor looks up at the balcony. Richard and Fran glance at each other as the audience members around them stand. Later in the lobby, several Nazis flank an officer behind a desk. Sig and his mother stand facing him.
Dore vielmals, Graf von Aschenhausen, dass Sie aufgehalten werden. Es ist nur eine Formalität, wie Sie wissen. Sie können jetzt gehen. Ja. Die nächste, bitte. Ihr Name?
Hilde von Barth.
Sig leads his mother by the arm past a single file line of concertgoers. They approach Fran and Richard.
My dear Richard, the police may be hunting for the murderer, but certainly you and your wife are above suspicion. Let me see if I can arrange for you to leave.
That's very kind of you. And Sig, we'd be very grateful if you could arrange something for Mr. Thornley here. He's also from Oxford.
Mr. Thornley is well known to you?
Mr. Thornley is one of Richard's prize pupils. We're all staying at the Gasthof Kleist here.
Yes, we're going on to do a little climbing in the Tyrol tomorrow.
You are indeed fortunate, Mr. Thornley, to have such exemplary traveling companions. I'll see what I can do.
I have a schloss, a castle, a few kilometers from here. It would be so nice if you would all take supper with me when we are out of this disagreeable place.
We'd love to.
Everything is arranged.
Oh, thank you, Sig.
Sigurd, your friends are going to sup with us.
Oh, that will be very kind of them.
The von Aschenhausens lead Fran away. Richard and Thornley follow.
That was very decent of you, Mr. Miles.
Don't mention it. I mean, don't mention it.
As they pass a row of Nazi guards, Fran reaches down and tugs on her heel.
Something wrong with Mrs. Miles?
It's just a little habit she has when she's nervous or upset. Francis.
Fran glances back at her husband and smiles, then tugs on her heel again before continuing onward. Later, Fran, Richard, and the Countess sit in the back seat of an automobile.
Thanks for getting us out of there, Sig.
No, don't mention it, please, Richard. After all, it was nothing compared to that night at Oxford, when you rescued me from the clutches of that proctor. Ah, those were the good old days. I haven't forgotten them.
When we first met you tonight, I thought you had forgotten.
And to tell you the truth, Richard, I was trying not to show my feelings. I must confess I wasn't quite sure that you would want to recognize me. After all, I know how people in England feel about us. In your land, and in England, the country is the government and the government is the country. But they do not understand that with other countries that is not always so. For many of us here, life is not so easy. But this is our home, and we must live in it. And with great care.
I do not live with care.
Mother.
I say whatever I please in a loud voice before a Nazi.
Now in the dining room of the von Aschenhausen castle.
Too bad he did not also shoot the conductor. But one cannot have everything. At least there is now one less bourgeois in the world. Colonel Gerald, a bank clerk.
You're a dreadful snob, Mother.
The more snobs, the fewer Colonel Gerald's.
It was a very clever snob that shot Colonel Gerald, Mother.
I wouldn't say so, Sig. It's very easy to take a pot shot at a sitting bird.
Ah, but when did he take the pot shot? That was the clever part. It was when the drummer came down. So.
Richard glances at Thornley, whose face is shiny with sweat.
The shot would have been heard and our assassin seized. But he knew his list, this man. Come, I will show you.
As Sig pulls out Fran's chair for her, Thornley does the same for the Countess.
I'm sorry you must go to the Tyrol tomorrow. Why do you wish to climb the mountain?
I don't know. It gets one away from things, I suppose.
But from what do you wish to get away, Mr. Thornley?
Nothing, I...
Ah, here it is. Now, who plays? You, Mr. Thornley?
Well, yes. Just a little.
Will you please do us the honor?
Sig sets a book of sheet music on a piano stand. Sweat glistens on Thornley's face as he leafs through it.
I'm afraid I'm not very familiar with this concerto.
No, it doesn't matter. It's just the effect I want.
With a grim look on his face, Thornley sits at the piano.
I'm awfully sorry. I'm really no good at sight reading.
Francis, why don't you take a shot at it?
All right, I will have a shot at it.
That's just what our assassin did.
Grinning, Fran takes a seat at the piano.
Already we see the hand of the assassin in his pocket. His fingers close round the gun. Now he takes his hand a little way from his pocket. With the approach of the crescendo, he takes the gun right out from his pocket. The drummer is raising his drumsticks. Our assassin is raising his gun. And now, bang!
You would have made a very good detective, Sigurd.
Or a very good murderer.
I think we should have something a little less morbid. Count Sigurd, you remember this. You went to Oxford.
Oh, certainly.
Jolly boating weather and a hay harvest breeze.
Come on, Thornley.
Rain on the feather, shade off the trees.
Later, Sig waves from his castle's front porch to his departing guests as they climb into the back of an automobile. As it pulls away, Sig turns to his mother and shrugs. Now at the Gasthof Kleist, Frau Kleist retrieves a key from the mailbox as Fran, Richard, and Thornley arrive.
Good night, Frau Kleist.
Good night, Herr Thornley.
Good night.
Good night,
Thornley. Good night. I'm so sorry, Frau Miles. You should have had this terrible experience. It just came over the radio.
It wasn't very pleasant.
It was a great tragedy. He was a most important man, this Colonel Gerold.
Is that so?
Commandant of the concentration camp at Dachau.
Oh, great pity, isn't it?
Sad loss.
Oh, Frau Kleist, may we have our bill first thing in the morning? We're leaving for Pürtusau.
To climb the mountains?
Yes, and also look over a famous collection of chessmen.
Frau Kleist watches with a slight grin as the couple heads up the staircase. Now flames lick the inside of a metal fireplace as a pair of white gloves are tossed inside. Thornley stands and turns around to see Richard enter through the door. Richard eyes the fireplace, then shuts the door behind him. He carries the Liszt music book to the piano, where he picks up the torn concerto sheet. Holding the book open, he matches the sheet's torn edge to the ripped edge inside the book. He gives Thornley a grim stare, then carries the book and loose sheet to the fireplace. Thornley's gaze remains locked on the fire as Richard tosses the sheet on the flames, then tears pages from the book and adds them to the fire. Smoke billows from the paper as it blisters into the rising flames. Richard tosses the rest of the book inside, then straightens up next to the Englishman. The two men's eyes remain fixed on the burning paper.
Thornley, I'm afraid I'm going to have to withdraw that invitation to climb.
Well, of course. I never imagined you meant it seriously.
But I did mean it. I suppose the sporting thing to do would be to still take you along. But there are times when a man can't afford to be sporting. How long are you staying here?
I was thinking of going to Italy quite soon.
I should make it very soon if I were you.
Richard turns and walks to the door.
I'd do it again if I had the chance. He killed my fiancée because she wouldn't talk. She wouldn't tell them anything that would incriminate me. She was so brutally beaten that she died next morning in a cell at Dachau.
Dachau?
We were asked to contact somebody over here. It all sounded very simple. Like you, we were above suspicion. But the same thing will happen to you and Mrs. Miles. They watch everything you do, hear everything you say. I warn you.
Later, in a village nestled between snowy mountain peaks, a horse pulls a cart across a field. Now Fran lifts a large handcrafted chess piece from a board.
You know, these are so beautiful, I think I'll have to learn how to play chess.
Are these for sale, or did you make them for someone?
A gentleman who lives here in the Sommermans asked me to make them.
Is he a collector?
The Herr Dr. Mespelbrunn.
Dr. Mespelbrunn.
The proprietor adjusts his glasses.
Yes, indeed. He has a large collection, including some very valuable Grodnertal pieces.
Grodnertal? I wonder if we could see them.
Why not? The Herr Doctor is always pleased to show his collection to those who really admire and understand.
I see. We'll take a look.
The doctor's house is not far from here.
He puts a cigarette in his mouth.
Have you got it?
Oh.
The doctor's house is a big one on the plaza.
As Richard pulls his lighter away from the cigarette, the proprietor grabs his hand and blows out the flame.
Pardon me. This is a little habit of mine. I acquired it from Dr. Mespelbrunn. He jokes to me about it, and he yet always does it himself.
Really?
Yes, always. He says without his little habit, he would not know himself.
Richard glances at his wife.
Thanks very much.
Fran picks up a wrapped package from a table.
I shall send your package to your hotel. Oh,
thank you.
Later outside, Fran and Richard walk along a fenced mountain path. They stop at a bend and look out over the quaint village. Holding his cane at his side, Richard reaches into his pocket.
Well, the end of the trail.
Margaret, it's beautiful.
Richard lights up a cigarette. Fran grabs his hand and blows out the flame from his lighter.
Oh, Dr. Mespelbrunn, I presume.
Right, Dr. Livingston. Aren't you excited?
Yeah, a little.
My blood pressure's going up, too.
I thought I was the only one that could do that to you.
Don't be so conceited, darling.
They continue down the trail, arm in arm. Later, they arrive at the large front door of a country house. Richard grabs the knocker.
Do you think we'll be intruding, Richard?
No. Collectors are always glad to see one another. Except when they both want the same thing.
The door swings open. A brawny man stands inside.
Guten Tag. Ist Herr Dr. Mespelbrunn zu Hause?
Kommen Sie.
Richard follows his wife inside. The brawny man shuts the door behind them, takes Richard's hat and cane, and motions to a living room where chess pieces fill a glass display table.
Nehmen Sie Platz.
As Fran and Richard stroll over to the living room, the brawny man sets the cane and hat on a table, then moves to a staircase. He stops and glances at the couple before heading up. As Richard looks around at the room's leather furniture, Fran peeks back around the corner.
Richard, remember when the OU, a dramatic society, put on Macbeth?
Yeah.
The two boys with the makeup?
You mean under first and second murderer?
He looks like both of them.
Yeah.
Fran tugs on her leather gloves as she steps past her husband.
Well, the doctor certainly has a chess collection, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. You know, Richard, there's an air of culture about this room. Could it be Oxford?
Might be.
I wonder. Oh, Germany's certainly a beautiful country, isn't it?
No, nothing wrong with it.
What's that?
Too many Germans.
With his hands in his pockets, Richard strolls to a table and looks down.
Fran?
Yes, darling?
He nods toward the table. Looking down, Fran sees the sheet music for My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose. The two exchange a glance. Sig comes down the stairs. Seeing Richard and Fran, he stops and smiles.
Well, this really is a pleasure. How did you discover my retreat?
We didn't until this moment.
No, we were looking for someone quite different.
Really? Who?
And Dr. Mespelbrin.
Oh, won't you sit down, please?
Thank you. An old woodcarver in Pertusaw told us that Dr. Mespelbrin's chess collection was well worth a visit. You know, chess is my weakness.
No, I didn't know you played the game.
Oh, perhaps it was after you left Oxford that it took me up.
This is Dr. Mespelbrin's house, isn't it?
Indeed it is. And I expect you're wondering what I'm doing here. Well, I don't want to seem mysterious, but all I can tell you is that my presence here is in connection with some very important work. And as two good Democrats, I'm sure you will find yourself in complete sympathy with my work. Oh, but I'm being a terrible host. You must try some of our famous Pertusauer Kirsch.
Fran glances at Richard, who raises his eyebrows and nods. Meanwhile, Sig fills three tiny glasses.
You know, that was the most enjoyable sing-song we had at Mother's house.
Yes, it was nice, wasn't it?
Won't you sing for me again, Mrs. Miles?
You mean now?
Why not?
Well, if you insist.
Prosit.
After finishing her drink, Fran turns to the piano.
Yes, that's delicious.
She sets down her glass and sits.
Shall we play him our favorite, Richard?
Why not?
All right.
Richard pulls his cigarette case from his pocket.
Oh, cigarette?
Sig takes one from the case and Richard lights it for him. Fran watches intently as her husband continues letting the lighter's flame burn. Sig takes a drag on his cigarette.
Thank you.
Richard slowly pulls the lit flame to his own cigarette, then extinguishes it. Fran masks her look of consternation with a smile.
Will you sing it, darling?
Richard sets his lighter back in his pocket and sits next to his wife at the piano. Sig takes a sip of his Kirsch as he watches them.
Sylvia, what is she that all our swains commend her? Holy fair and wise is she.
Our view moves toward a vent on the wall near the ceiling. Now in another room, we turn from a vent near the floor and see an empty table next to a window seat. Nearby, a man sits tied to a chair with a gag over his mouth. He stares wide-eyed at the vent from under his tousled gray hair. Back downstairs.
Bravo. Thank you. Memories of the old days at Oxford.
You asked for it, you got it.
Well, that's my dog. He grows restless because he's shut in today for having been a bad boy. Will you excuse me?
Hans!
Sig looks up the staircase.
Hans! Gib dem Hund einen Knochen!
He turns back to his guests.
My man doesn't seem to be there. I'll let the dog out. I think he's been punished enough for one day. Will you excuse me for a minute?
Oh, I love dogs. May I see yours?
Sig stops mid-stride on the stairs.
I'm so sorry. I'm afraid he's rather difficult with strangers.
As he continues up out of sight, Fran grabs her husband.
What do you make of it?
Mespelbrin's in the soup. If we'd given him the red, red, roll signal, we'd be in it with him.
Yes, but how did he know the signal?
I don't know. The important thing is he didn't know about the cigarette lighter, right?
No, he didn't.
Upstairs, Sig swings open a door and quickly eyeballs the bound prisoner. He reshuts the door, then heads up another staircase to the third floor. Back in the room, Dr. Mespelbrun rocks back and forth in his chair, his eyes darting toward the wall vent.
Downstairs, Fran turns from her husband, and the two look around. Upstairs, the doctor crawls on his knees while still tied to the chair.
What kind of a dog would you say that was?
Could be an English bulldog, huh?
Yeah.
Upstairs, the sweaty doctor reaches the vent and frantically scratches his head against the grating. Back downstairs. Richard runs to the wall and stands on a chair, turning his ear toward the vent. Upstairs, the doctor leans close to the vent and rubs off the mouth gag.
Who is it? Nesselbaum. Get out of here. The Gestapo are on their way down for you. Don't use the road. Wait until it's dark.
I'll come back for you later.
Richard and his wife run across the living room, then halt. Upstairs, Sig comes down from the third story with two Gestapo officers. Back downstairs, Richard carefully steps to the table near the staircase and retrieves his hat and cane. Upstairs, the two officers wait from a distance as Sig heads down alone.
I'm so sorry to keep you waiting.
Sig looks around at the empty room. The officers rush down behind him.
He's in front! Schnell, hier, vorwärts!
As Sig follows the officers out to the front yard, a closet door opens.
Well, it worked.
Richard and Fran rush out.
If we ever build a house, believe me, it's going to have plenty of closets.
They head out a back door. Upstairs, Hans enters the guest room.
Das wirst du mir bezahlen, du alter Gauner, du. Ist mir ganz egal, ob du atmen kannst oder nicht.
He sets the doctor's chair back up and replaces the gag. Now outside, Richard and Fran peer out from behind a hill.
I think it's dark enough. Could you find your way back to Pritisaw?
Without you, you're crazy.
I told Mesperun I was coming back.
Well, that goes for me, too.
Hey, wait a minute. Look, they're out again.
They've got a dog with them this time.
In the path below, Hans and Sig walk with a leashed dog. Sig continues on as Hans heads right with the sniffing dog.
They're taking sides to cut us off. Come on.
Well, what about the dog?
We'll have to take a chance on that.
Richard helps his wife to her feet. Meanwhile, Hans walks the German Shepherd across the fenced mountain path, then unleashes it and follows it up a craggy hill. Fran and Richard stop and look back. With the dog closing in on them, they press forward. Elsewhere, Sig carefully makes his way up a rocky bluff. Richard leads his wife by the hand down a series of large boulders. They run off. Meanwhile, Hans climbs over a cliff and pulls a pistol from his pocket. Elsewhere, Richard and Fran come to a dead end inside a canyon. They look around desperately.
Come on.
They turn and start to head back out of the canyon.
Richard!
From atop a nearby boulder, the dog bears its teeth at Richard.
Get out, Fran. On your face.
Drawing his sword cane, Richard pushes Fran aside as the dog pounces. Fran hides her face. Elsewhere, Sig turns and heads off in a different direction. Back in the canyon, Richard replaces his blade in the cane sheath. He helps Fran to her feet, tears glistening on her cheeks. The dog lies motionless nearby.
Von Aschenhaus must have heard that scream.
Which way do we go?
We have a chance to get back to the house. Can you make it?
Is that all right? No.
Later, on a wooded path.
Fran, you stay here. I'll get back as soon as I can.
Fran lingers on the moonlit path and shoulders her purse as she watches her husband hurry off. She adjusts her shoe as she moves into the shadowy foliage. Approaching the house, Richard glances up to a terrace and side door. Glancing briefly over his shoulder, he reaches up to the porch and climbs up to its vine-covered railing. He throws a leg over its whitewashed frame, then stands at the door. Richard tries the door's knob, then spots another higher balcony. Standing on the terrace's railing, he pulls himself up onto the balcony and climbs over into the shadows. An arm grabs at his throat from the darkness and begins choking him. He struggles for a moment, then looks up to his assailant.
Hello. I'm the most persistent guide, am I not?
Richard stares up at Hassert.
What in the name of Judas are you doing here?
Friends in Vienna are deeply concerned about Dr. Messelborn's health. I'm a kind of visiting physician.
His English friends are also concerned about his condition.
Yes, I know. Come, I have this almost open.
Hassert opens a large pocket knife. He slips the blade between two French doors and jiggles it until the door pops open. Inside the dark room, Hassert produces a flashlight and Richard checks a stairwell. As Richard takes the first step, the two men turn to a nearby door. Together, they cautiously approach, and Richard pushes it open. They peer into the room. The beam from Hassard's flashlight falls on Dr. Mespelbrun, still tied to the chair with a gag in his mouth. Hassard sets the flashlight down on a table, letting the beam illuminate the room. They move to him, and Hassard pulls his knife out again, then begins slicing through the ropes. Richard loosens the taped gag. The doctor's head bobs groggily as the white rag is taken out of his mouth. As the ropes around his torso fall away, the doctor slumps weakly in the chair. Hassard produces a flask from his coat and tilts it into the man's mouth.
You better carry him. No. Give me a minute. I'll be all right.
We haven't much time, my friend.
I can make it. Just give me a hand.
They help him up out of the chair.
Wait a minute.
Did your wife's hat arrive safely?
A little battered, but the rose still blooms.
And they're still waltzing in Vienna, Doctor.
I'm very glad to see you, gentlemen.
We're glad to see you, Dr.
Smith. Just call me Smith.
I was told it would be easy to find you, Dr. Smith. It hasn't been exactly a paper chase.
The two men lead him out to the balcony. Elsewhere, Sig climbs over a rocky ridge. Back at the house, Hassard helps the doctor over the balcony's railing. Fran hurries up as Richard, sweat shining on his face, helps the doctor to the ground.
Darling, this is Dr. Smith. He's in Miles.
The group rushes off with the doctor. Now Sig pushes through the canyon's underbrush. Arriving at the house, he enters the room where the doctor was held and turns on the light. Sig gapes at the empty chair and pieces of rope on the floor. Pulling a white handkerchief from his pocket, he rushes out. Downstairs, Sig passes through the foyer, wiping his hands and then his brow. He replaces the handkerchief as he approaches a tall cabinet. He opens it, showing 8 neatly packed bookshelves. Pulling on the shelves, the bookcases open outward, revealing radio equipment with a secret compartment. Sig grabs a handset and earphones, then switches on the radio and spins a large dial.
Alarm! Befehl! Wege sperren! Auto stoppen! 2 Amerikaner!
Now 5 German officers run out of a building and pile into a convertible. In another car, Hassard drives the others.
In the glove compartment, you will find some beauty salve. Try it. It will make you less conspicuous.
Hassard looks into the rearview mirror at Fran.
Under the seat, you will find a small junk shop. I advise a change of costume. You first, Mrs. Myers.
So Mr. Myers will watch the road behind, and I'll watch only the road ahead.
Are you sure this man Schultz can get us passports?
Certainly. He makes beautiful passports. That's his trade.
Yes, but what about money? All of ours is at the hotel.
Oh, don't worry. I'll find enough for your fares to Italy. After that, you can call on your consul.
As the doctor continues applying salve to his face, Richard and Fran change clothes. In the officer's car, the Germans speed down the road. Back with Hassard.
Thomas Reichmann, Stefan Rudinger, and Bernard Lubeck.
Those names must reach Whitehall without delay.
And if I fail, after all, there is a possibility.
You'll not fail.
I understand.
Remember that those names, and only those names, are the ones that can be trusted.
Yes, sir.
How's that?
Perfect.
Good. We're almost in Jenbach. I leave you here.
Hassard pulls the car to the side of the road, and the doctor gets out. He leans into Fran's window.
There's just one more thing.
From the folds in his tie, the doctor produces a tiny rectangle wrapped in paper.
I'm relying on you to get this back to the Foreign Office. I think you know what it is. They catch you. You must somehow destroy it. Goodbye. God bless you both.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Bye, Doctor.
As the car pulls away, the doctor waves after them. Back in the car, Hassard keeps his eyes on the road, and Richard watches out the back window. Fran glances back as well, wearing a flowered scarf around her head, knotted under her chin. The car slows to a stop at the side of the road, stopping under a tree. The couple gets out.
That's Innsbruck right ahead.
Tomorrow at 11 at the Franciscan Church, then.
I'll meet you there with the money for sure.
Incidentally, you are a good guide.
Thank you.
As the car pulls away, Fran and Richard hurry off the road and crouch together in the bushes.
Do you remember the directions?
First turn to the left, second to the right, 2 blocks down the Heinstrasse, 1/2 block to the right, Franz Schultz. Here they come. Duck.
They hunch deeper into the shadows as the German officer's car speeds past.
All clear. Let's go.
Later, Fran and Richard stroll into a quaint German town. Fran wears a long peasant skirt. Richard wears lederhosen and a Tyrolean-style fedora. They pass young couples cuddling in the darkness. A man playfully chases a young woman. He catches up to her and they walk off arm in arm.
I guess we better follow the custom of the country.
Like so? First pleasant custom I found in Germany.
They climb stairs to another street. Fran rests her head on Richard's shoulder. As they walk casually past German officers at a lookout station, Richard wraps his arm snugly around his wife, holding her hand. He leans over to kiss her as they walk past a mustached officer. He smiles at him, and the officer returns the grin. They continue on. Now, in a dark room, two hands agitate developer solution over two pictures. The photos, side by side on one sheet, show Fran with a full head of gray hair and Richard with a gray mustache and glasses. As the photos become clearer, a woman pulls the paper out of the tray. She shakes excess liquid off the picture, then carries it to a sink where she briefly dips the picture in another tray. She places it in a towel and blots it dry. The middle-aged woman carries the photos to another room where an older, chubby man with glasses sits with Fran and Richard. He hands the photos to the disguised couple as they adjust their costumes.
Excellent.
I bet you've never seen anyone that looks worse than their passport picture.
Never.
You do.
Thank you, darling. Try them and put them in the passports. It is time you were on your way to the church.
Yes, I had better be going.
It is not for you to go to the church, Mr. Mainz. A woman will be less noticeable.
Why?
Men in Germany are too busy for religion.
Well, there's no law against it.
No, but those who have time to go to church are very well observed.
Well, I don't mind going in the least.
No, darling, I've decided to go.
What you decide is a matter of no interest to us, Mr. Miles. I'm protecting not alone you, but my wife and myself. Mrs. Miles, we collect the money. You will take the Milan train. It's 2:15 from the city station. When you leave the church, you will take the bus line to Gershov station and join your husband on the Milan train, which stops there at 2:40.
What if one of us should miss the train?
Then we hope the best for you. But I must ask you not to return here. I can do no more for you. I'm sorry, but it is necessary to protect myself so I can be of service to others.
I see.
He's quite right, darling. Quite right. Goodbye, Herr Schulz.
Goodbye.
She shakes the old man's hand.
Goodbye, Frau Schulz.
The woman hugs Fran and gives her the passport.
Oh, we can never thank you enough.
You can thank us by being most careful.
Yes, I shall.
Richard takes a wicker basket from the old man and follows Fran into the next room. Before a mirror, Fran puts on a dark hat over her gray hair, then dons wire-rimmed glasses.
I'll be thinking of Gershov Station while you're away.
Think of something with a prettier name. Dover.
Or Oxford.
Home.
He walks her to the front door.
Oh, just in case something should happen, I'd better tell you the names that have to get to Whitehall.
I know them. Maria Kutoska, Ulrich Windler, Johann Fabre, Thomas Reichmann, Stefan Rudinger, Bernard Lubeck.
Good girl.
I'll see to it that nothing delays you. It so happens I'm rather fond of you.
They kiss, holding each other's shoulders tightly.
Darling, promise me you'll never grow one of those.
She points to his mustache.
Be careful.
You too.
They kiss again, then Richard opens the door for her and closes it behind her. As Fran walks out into the street, Richard watches her go. Now a German officer's hand holds up the negative of Fran and Richard's photo.
Du machst also falsche Papiere, du Schwein. Wo sind Sie hingegangen?
Das weiß ich nicht. Sie haben es mir nicht gesagt.
Sie haben es mir nicht gesagt. Nehmen Sie 50 Leute. Und durchsuchen Sie die ganze Stadt!
Sehr schon mal für. Halleluja!
A tall Nazi glares at the couple.
Du dreckiges, verlogenes, altes Schwein! Werden dir dafür sämtliche Knochen!
The Nazi leads the couple away. Now Hassert leads a tour at a cathedral.
The view of the facade from the south is the most interesting one. It most clearly illustrates the difference between our warm German Gothic and the more severe style which you know in France and England. Luckily, the sun is best for us at this time of day. This way, please.
The group follows Hassert away. Fran trails out of the church behind them and heads off in the other direction. She snaps her purse closed and places it into the wicker basket as she walks calmly down the street. Across the street, the tall Nazi stands at a shop window watching her. As Fran strides on, Thornley exits a shop. As he closes the door, he notices her walk by. As he watches, she tugs on the heel of her shoe and continues on. Thornley sets off behind the disguised Fran. With the Nazi officer behind him, Thornley follows her across a busy intersection, then pauses as a bicycle rider passes. As Thornley catches up to Fran, the tall Nazi also crosses the street, frowning as he keeps his eyes on Fran ahead of him. Thornley quickens his pace and leans in closer to study Fran's face.
Why, Mrs. Miles?
Fran's eyes widen and she hastens ahead. Thornley slows, watching as she stops to browse at a table outside a shop. He pensively rubs his chin, then casually strides up next to her. A few paces behind Thornley, the tall Nazi comes up to the shop. Fran and Thornley stand side by side, peering down at the table of books as the Nazi enters. Inside the store, the Nazi shoos a man away from a public telephone.
Check here. What's wrong?
Trouble?
Keeping her gaze down, Fran idly flips through a book. Thornley picks up another book and runs a finger across the word professor on its cover. Fran glances over.
Mm-hmm. Gershoff Station, 240.
Inside the shop, the tall Nazi hangs up the phone and looks out the window as Fran walks away from Thornley. The Nazi exits and hurries down the street after her. As the officer passes, Thornley turns to look. Keeping his eyes on her, the Nazi stops as a car pulls to the curb next to him. He salutes Sig and three other Nazis.
Herr Obersturmbannführer, da geht die Amerikanerin.
Sig looks up the street to Fran.
Vorwärts!
The tall Nazi steps on the car's running board and hangs on as the car drives off. Behind them, Thornley spots a bicycle parked nearby and mounts it. As he rides off, three young boys chase him. The car speeds around the corner with Thornley close behind on the bicycle. Fran turns to see the car of Nazis approaching. She hurries around a corner as the car accelerates. Thornley continues on, followed by two boys on bikes and another on foot. The Germans round the corner and pull up next to Fran. Two officers jump out and stop her, then place her in the back of the car.
Bitte, steigen Sie ein. Kommen Sie mit. Ohne jedes Aufsehen.
The vehicle drives off as Thornley stands, watching with the three boys.
You're lucky you did not catch her, you fool. That car's from Dreikirchen.
Halt's Maul. Maul.
The three boys pedal away from the Englishman, who stares off grimly.
Dreikirchen.
Now people mill about a train platform. Richard, still in disguise, leans out the window of one of the train's cars. He scans the station and spots Thornley walking along the train with his hand in his pocket, casually peering in windows. He passes Richard. Thornley stops and glances back toward the whistling stranger. From the train, Richard watches him change direction and enter a building on the platform. Inside the station's pub, Thornley walks to the counter and is greeted by a barmaid.
Beer und Wurst, bitte.
Beer und Wurst, bitte.
As the woman moves away, Richard enters the pub. Thornley's gaze shifts to him as he walks to stand next to him at the bar. The woman returns and places a plate of food in front of Thornley.
Schön.
Danke.
Kaffee, bitte.
Café,
yeah. As the woman leaves, Thornley leans closer to Richard.
Francis von Aschenhausen.
The woman briefly returns with a mug for Thornley.
Where?
Dreikirchen.
God help us.
You know Dreikirchen?
Yes. Sort of a high school for training their elite guards.
Murder.
At least it isn't a concentration camp.
As the waitress wanders over again, the two men sip their beverages. Richard drinks from a small coffee cup and Thornley from a ceramic beer stein. They both watch her stiffly until she leaves again.
We'll need a car.
Know where we can get one?
If I can find my friend, I'll meet you on the Dreikirchen Road. 7 o'clock. 2 kilometers from the outskirts of Innsbruck.
Thornley takes another drink from his stein. Finishing his coffee, Richard brushes his fingers across his mustache. Thornley watches him place a coin on the bar, then exit. A row of beer steins resting on the counter fades to a sign of smiling cats holding hands over the words Schwarzkatz. Richard stands at the building's front door, peering in through the window. Inside, a violinist leads a band playing for a dance floor scattered with couples. Richard enters and spots Hassard in a gray suit dancing with a plump older woman in a white dress. As Richard removes his hat, a short balding maitre d' comes up to him.
Good man.
His eyebrows raised, the maitre d' moves away from Richard. Hassard sidesteps with his partner across the dance floor as Richard watches. They pass a few feet from Richard, who leans forward over the dance floor's railing. Hassard dances his partner away without noticing. Richard waits anxiously. Hassard notices Richard and furrows his brow as Richard quickly raises his hand in a pointing motion. Hassard shoots him with a questioning look, then returns his attention to his partner with a smile. Richard glances at two women at a nearby table.
"So I said, yes, I'm English, but don't ask me if there's going to be a war. I don't know.
Richard speaks to a brunette woman.
"Would you care to dance?"
"Oh, certainly."
The other woman, a blonde, stands. They walk out to the dance floor where they clasp hands and begin to tango. Richard leads her clumsily toward Hassard and his partner. He shadows the couple, pausing while another couple cuts off his path, then bumps his partner into Hassard.
"Oh, I'm ever so sorry."
"It seems that even on the dance floor, the English will not give us living room."
Hassard dances away and Richard moves to follow.
"Calm yourself, we were miles apart."
Hassard focuses a confused stare on Richard through his monocle. Richard glares back.
"Miles apart, indeed."
As Hassard dances away, Richard moves next to him again.
"Yes, I will trouble you to lower your voice."
Hassard tries to dance around them. Richard and his partner stumble.
"Oh!
Will you please try to follow?"
"I don't know what you're doing. It certainly isn't the tango. And you're no gentleman."
The woman storms off. As Richard slowly leaves the dance floor alone, Hassard finishes his tango with a broad smile. He deposits his partner in a chair near the dance floor.
"Clean that knee, Pop."
Pulling a handkerchief from his pocket, Hassard wipes his brow and leaves the dance floor. He moves over to the restrooms and pushes open a door with a bearded man in a long tunic painted on it. Later that night, a car speeds along a winding mountain road. Inside, Richard sits in the passenger seat as Hassard drives, staring grimly ahead. Richard taps his shoulder. Thornley steps from the side of the road as the car stops to pick him up. Now, the car drives past a sign marked Dreikirchen, heading farther down the mountain road. It pulls to a stop in a wooded area, and the three men get out. They head into the woods, then pull back a tree branch. Moonlight shines on a massive castle with a tall clock tower.
"Quite a training school, huh?"
"We're in luck. There's a big party rally in town tonight. They passed me an hour ago."
"The only cover seems to be the bushes and the chapel. I'll go ahead and see if it's clear.
Good luck."
Hassard pats Richard on the shoulder as he heads off. He and Thornley watch as Richard scales an 8-foot wall and stealthily creeps along.
"So far, so good."
Richard sneaks through a small graveyard, then creeps forward to the structure's front door. Two German soldiers step out of a doorway and Richard ducks out of sight. Richard presses himself deeper into the shadows of a tree-lined wall as the soldiers stroll to the end of the front walkway. Smiling, they turn and casually head back to the doors. While their backs are turned, Richard moves closer and dives behind a low wall. As they turn and start back in Richard's direction, a second-story arched window swings open and another soldier yells down to the two watchmen. The two soldiers hurry off. Richard peeks over the wall. Now on motorcycles, the two soldiers speed away. Richard gets to his feet and sneaks past the front door and moves around the house. On the road, the two cycles head down the mountain. Back in the courtyard, Richard moves down three steps. He notices someone coming and ducks back into the bushes. A soldier eating an apple steps out a side door, followed by a chef waving a wooden spoon. The chef pushes him away and shuts the door. As he strolls down the courtyard's walkway, the soldier passes the stairs. In the bushes, Richard removes his glasses. He springs from the shrubbery, grabs the soldier in a chokehold, and pulls him back into the foliage. Nearby, Hassard and Thornley advance. They rush down the stairs and dash into the bushes where Richard crouches over the soldier.
Well done, sir.
Richard removes the soldier's tie and uses it to gag the unconscious man. As Thornley uses his own belt to bind the soldier's feet, Hassard takes the gun from the soldier's holster and also removes his own belt. Together, Richard and Hassard use it to tie the man's wrists.
Now, let's see what the cook is cooking.
The three men roll the bound soldier into the bushes. Then Richard leads them stealthily to the side door. They hop over a low hedge and Richard eases the door open. In the kitchen, the chef's back is turned as he stirs a bowl of thick white batter with a wooden spoon.
Oh.
His hands fall away from the spoon. Hassard's finger dips into the batter and he tastes it as Richard stands over the chef. The three men run off in the direction of the scream. In an office, Fran is tied to a chair, her face bruised.
Where is your husband?
I've told you again and again. And if you bring Goering, Goebbels, and Himmler in here, the answer will still be the same. Italy.
That will not be necessary. I shall recognize the truth when I hear it.
That will be quite a novelty.
So he went to Italy and left you here?
Yes.
You're a poor liar, Mrs. Miles. Where is he? Ah, this grows tedious. Try a little more of your persuasion, Kurt.
Hassard and the others burst through the door. Richard rushes Sig, sending him flying onto a desk and begins choking him. Thornley punches the soldier and wrestles him on another desk. Sig tries a feeble punch and pushes at Richard's face, his own contorted with pain. As the Nazi soldier lands a right cross, Thornley is sent reeling to the floor. The soldier draws his pistol and shoots him in the gut. Guarding Fran, Hassard shoots the soldier, who levels his gun on them for a moment, then falls. Grimacing, Sig reaches for a lit candelabra on the desk and thrusts it into Richard's cheek. As Richard stumbles to the floor next to the dead soldier, Sig reaches for his gun. Richard shoots Sig before he can draw. As Sig falls, Richard notices that the drapes are on fire, then moves to help with Fran.
Posse, answer the phone.
Yeah? Here von Aschenhausen.
Gestapo headquarters at Innsbruck.
Say the girl has confessed.
Alles ist in Ordnung. Die Frau hat alles eingestanden.
The husband and two others are heading for the Swiss border. They must be stopped.
Ihr Mann und die beiden anderen sind auf dem Wege zur Schweizer Grenze. Müssen unbedingt aufgehalten werden. Gut. Was? Heil Hitler.
Imagine anyone will have a job getting into Switzerland tonight.
At the other desk, Thornley stamps some papers while holding his side. Hassard looks at the blazing drapes.
Does anyone smell something burning here?
Here's a Gestapo seal. And a Gestapo pass. That should do for the Italian border guards.
We'll give it a try. Come on.
They'll have a Viking's funeral, huh?
It's too good for them.
Hassard follows Richard and Fran as they hurry down the stairs. At the bottom, Richard looks back.
Where's Thornley? Thornley! Thornley!
Richard races back to the office. Thornley lies on the floor.
Thornley!
Heaving him over his shoulder, Richard carries him out of the room. In the compound's garage, they cover Thornley's body with a blanket.
Well, he finished his job.
I guess that's about as much as any of us can ask nowadays. Get in the back seat on the floor, Fran.
As the men don German uniforms, Fran gets in the back of one of the cars, a convertible officer's vehicle. They cover her with a blanket and Richard hops behind the wheel. He starts the car as Hassard gets in next to him, buttoning his collar. The headlights come on and they pull out of the garage. Now in the distance, flames rise from the castle. As the car heads down the mountain road, Hassard looks over his shoulder at the blaze.
Where goes the evidence?
Like the good old days of the Reichstag, huh?
Later, the car comes to a border post. German guards approach the car as it pulls to a stop.
Herr Hitler.
Amtlich.
Hassard hands the guard the forged pass.
Herr Hauptmann, melde gehorsamst ein Auto mit zwei Personen.
An officer takes the pass from the guard.
Heil Hitler.
The officer puffs a cigar as he studies the pass, then hands it back to Hassard. He motions for them to wait. Richard's eyes shift as the heavy-set officer strolls around the back of the car. He leans into the car and Richard pulls away. The officer jumps back, waving.
Herr Obersturmführer, bitte halten Sie an! Meine Zigarre ist in Ihren Wagen gefallen. Sie brennt noch! Halten Sie!
Guards stop the car just before the Italian border. The officer runs up.
Herr Obersturmführer, ich bedauere, aber ich habe vorher meine Zigarre in Ihren Wagen fallen lassen. Wenn Sie gestatten, nehme ich sie raus.
Oh, bitte bemühen Sie sich nicht. Das wird schon nicht passieren. Ich habe sehr eilig.
He reaches into the back seat and retrieves his lit cigar from the floor. They let the car pass and it drives away. Later, it stops before a cliffside where giant snow-peaked mountains tower in the distance. They stop and get out of the car.
Hey, Fran.
Fran hops out as the men shed their German uniforms. Richard releases the car's brake, and all three push the car over the cliff.
Right.
It rolls over twice in midair before smashing against the cliffside. As the group peers over, the car erupts into flames.
Well, how about some spaghetti?
Richard drapes his arm around Fran, and they all stroll off. Words appear over a view of a European city's rooftops. The end.